From the many realms of Azeroth to the great dark beyond via the magic of podcasting, this is episode 39 of the Rolling Restart, a WoW podcast for you, for me, and for my co-host this week. He's more than just a mage or a monk. After all, he's a proud new owner of an owl-faced bird. He enjoys Overwatch plays of the game, vanquishing evil as a gnome barbarian, and reading perhaps one too many Star Wars novels. And again, it's okay to say the word mage around him. He likes that. Just don't put a tower next to it. From Azeroth Roundtable, Battle Pets, and the Secrets of Talengard, it's Ben Bumhoffer. Hi, Ben.
Every single time, I'm just absolutely amazed with your intro, and I appreciate it so much. But hi, Ro.
Hi.
How you doing?
Pretty good. It's one of the best things about this show is just writing intros for my regular hosts and trying to be creative with them each time. Thankfully, you and pretty much every other co-host is frequently talkative on Twitter, and so between Twitter and your podcasts and whatever other conversations I get with you, it gives me fuel for the fire, as it were.
I'm just glad that people actually remember Owlface Bird and how excited I am to actually have one of my own now.
I'm really proud of you. I have to ask, how many of the class mounts are you up to now? It seems like you've made it a mission for yourself.
I just have two left for the classes that matter.
How many classes matter? I know for you, Warlock doesn't matter, so we'll get that out of the way.
That is the only one that doesn't matter. So yeah, I just need the Druid Flight form, which I'm not going to use because I have the awesome bald eagle with moose antlers, mm-hmm. since I'm a High Mountain Druid now. And then I have the Rogue one left. I've heard that of the class order halls, the Death Knight and the Rogue are the two kind of coolest. So I'm going to leave it on a high note with the Rogue.
Okay. The Rogue, I mean, the Rogue mount is probably one of the coolest ones too, next to Owlface Bird and the Shaman Elemental. So,
I agree with that. Although I will say that for the quests for all of them, you know, like the little scenarios you get put in and stuff like that.
Yeah.
So far, my favorite has been the Hunter, and it's a very simple quest, but just it really seemed to completely have the idea of being a hunter in it, and I really enjoyed that.
Yeah, well, I haven't participated in that one myself. I've heard similar sentiments said from a number of people that the Hunter Mount one was probably one of the best quest lines done. And it's understandable considering the whole, you know, the whole relationship between Hunter and Pet, or Hunter and Mount, as it were. Mm-hmm. So
exactly. And especially since I was not a fan of the Order Hall at all. Mm. Like, it starts out and it feels like a cult, and then you just kind of go through and it's like, oh, I need to track stuff. Oh, I killed something. The end. Like, I honestly couldn't even really tell you what happened.
It's Hemet Nezingwary, the Order Hall.
Not even that, which is the sad thing. Although, what's cool is that you do get him as a follower, along with the little gnome hunter that you quest with in High Mountain.
Yep. And I've got to say really quick, Addy, right?
I think so.
The gnome followers for both that class hall and for what you would say the class hall that doesn't matter.
It doesn't.
But it's still, gnome companions are the best companions, and I really hope that there is a gnome companion for, you know what? I'd be totally fine with there being a gnome companion in, for the Horde and for the Alliance, because as we've, seen in other places, gnomes can get along with goblins.
They can. I mean, sometimes it takes a little bit of work and, you know, a little heart, if you will. Mm-hmm. And, well, did you want to? I'm not going to talk about it yet. We'll talk about it soon because I've got a lot to say on that.
I'm sure you do. I'm sure you do. But before we dive into the main topic for this episode, I think it's only fitting to just touch on something really quickly because we are literally from this episode 3 shows away from August 14th, which for most of the world is the launch of Battle for Azeroth. And I just have to ask you, where's your head? Where's your heart? How are you feeling about this expansion right now? Because you and I have talked about this in the past, and I know that you have some concerns in some areas, and you have mm-hmm. excitement in other areas. I'm just wondering, how do you feel right now?
Right now? Okay, so the big thing is the fact that we don't know the specifics for the Burning of Teldrassil has me very excited. Yes. I think that And I have a crazy wacky theory for this too, but I think that there is a chance that all the trepidation, all the worry that I've had towards the story and about, oh, the Horde are just being made to be the bad guys again. We're just going to fight our war chief again. You know, I have high hopes with the story, and I'm incredibly optimistic. I mean, I'm an optimistic person anyway, but I'm incredibly optimistic about it at this point in time, just because based on what our show topic is going to be about. But even more so, I think that Blizzard has heard, well, a lot of people who are excited, obviously, but I think they've kind of listened and heard the undercurrent of rumbling of like all the Horde players who aren't all in with the story idea of, oh, we're going evil, and kind of, you know, not necessarily have adjusted, but have held on to enough for everybody to be surprised what the outcome is going to be.
And I would say one of the bigger points for that, did you have a chance to check out the Three Sisters comic?
Yes, I did.
Okay, so now spoilers for the Three Sisters comic, which has been out for about a month now, but if you want to check out the comic yourself, then don't listen to this. By the way, there's going to be a spoiler alert for a lot of extra content outside of the game, so just consider this fair warning for comics, Before the Storm, anything and everything literature, comic-related, stuff's being spoiled today. In the Three Sisters comic, when the old gods are whispering to Illyria Windrunner, they are warning her against Sylvanas, saying, Sylvanas is the enemy, the enemy, the enemy. That the old gods are terrified of Sylvanas. And considering that there are a lot of people who have a strong feeling that while this is starting out Horde and Alliance, it's eventually going to lead toward a confrontation with one or more forces of the old gods. It seems like the old gods fear Sylvanas because they fear that she can basically defeat them. So I think in some ways there are a couple of hints that like Sylvanas may be painted as the bad guy by some people, but there may be reasons why people are trying to portray Sylvanas as the bad side. I mean, I don't think everything's all cut and dry.
Yeah, I'm kind of with you on that. And as we're going to get into further, you get a lot of understanding about Sylvanas in Before the Storm, even though she's only a POV character for, you know, roughly maybe like a quarter of the book, if that. But there's a lot that you can dig in from her, and I'm really excited to talk about that.
As am I, and it'll be interesting to see what you and I have each taken away from and what we've enjoyed the most about it. Now, since we're now digging into it, the majority of this episode is going to be talking about Before the Storm. I will just get it out of the way, a great piece of work by Christy Golden. If you want my 1 out of 10 review, it's an 11 out of 10. In my opinion, one of the best pieces of Warcraft novels that I have read in quite some time. And I've read, I'd say, about 2/3 of them.
That is quite a few. I've read mostly Christy Golden books. I did read the Malfurion one, the Stormage, and wasn't a big fan, but everything from Christy Golden that I've read, I've absolutely just loved and enjoyed. And this is no different. Where it kind of ranks with everything, though, I mean, gosh, it's really good. I think that it is an important book to read just for, you know, the sake of understanding characters, much less sake of understanding the MacGuffin for Battle for Azeroth.
I would say it's as important as Arthas to me, and Arthas is a pretty important book.
I you know what? I kind of put it right up there with that. And the fact that it, if anything, this is almost a sequel to Arthas, in a sense.
Yeah, I can see that.
That's one thing that I really love about it, because if you look at it as, okay, so Arthas obviously is about Arthas, but it's kind of a prequel to the undead story.
Yes.
And, you know, this could be seen as a sequel to the Arthas story as, like, kind of the aftermath after, you know, Wrath of the Lich King and everything like that. And it really helps to kind of, you know, get into the eyes and the minds of, you know, the Alliance, who, you know, this horrible tragedy happened. And I mean, you really don't get just, you know, if you watch cutscenes or if you kind of only know about what happened via the Caverns of Time Stratholme scenario and things like that, you really don't get how much of a tragedy Arthas going to Lordaeron and just, you know, raising the city actually was. And I mean, gosh, you know what happens, you know, everybody dies, they're being raised, you know, they're turned to the Scourge and everything like that. But just how dramatic and how hurtful and devastating this was is, I mean, it's really kind of revealed in this book.
Yeah, and I think this book also does a very good job at reminding readers and players of two key facts when it comes to the Forsaken, that they were the inhabitants, for the most part, of Lordaeron in the past, and second, mm-hmm. that they were human, they had human emotions, and for a good part of them, a lot of that still lingers.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. And I like how it goes into kind of the detail of, you know, the rotting flesh and how they're delicate and everything like that. But even more so how even among them, they understand that, oh, yeah, there's some people who didn't come back right. Mm-hmm. And I mean, those are the ones who are, yeah, let's kill everybody. Let's, you know, let's just destroy and everything, because, you know, whether it's their sense of loss of humanity versus, oh, a big, huge chunk of their brain is actually gone at this point. You know, it's one of those little like details that makes them a much more compelling, you know, cast of characters than just, you know, you're walking around, you're an undead in the Undercity, you know, just not really thinking about your past life. And the fact that Before the Storm really starts touching on the humanity behind the undead is just a huge credit to Christy Golden's writing.
It feels really weird to say the words, this novel really fleshes out the undead.
Yeah, that's grossly true.
We haven't really quite got to this. Did you read the physical book? Did you read an ebook, or did you listen to the audiobook?
Well, I consider an ebook to be a physical book at this point. So I went with that. The funny thing about audiobooks with me, while I can listen to podcasts and like D&D podcasts and things like that and know what's going on, if there's an audiobook going, I always lose my train of thought. I always stop listening, and like, I can't do something else while I'm listening to it. And so, yeah, took the time and read the book.
So I sometimes have that problem myself with audiobooks, and I rarely listen to audiobooks, but what did it for me was when I saw on Twitter in a tweet from Christy Golan that it was being narrated by the voice of Anduin Wrynn, Josh Keaton.
Yep.
And I felt like, okay, if this is actually being done by one of the voices of the characters in World of Warcraft from the cutscenes and stuff, I felt like I owed it to myself to actually try to do the audiobook this time around. And I did. And I will say, as someone who rarely listens to audiobooks, I was not disappointed at all. And Josh Keaton did an amazing job, not only, of course, portraying the character that he's had so much experience with, but giving a voice and a personality to all of the other characters in that book, you know, even the ones that, you know, would kind of seem out of character for a guy to give life to. So, of course, he gives Sylvanas a voice. And while it's not quite like the voice of Sylvanas that we hear when we are playing World of Warcraft, it's still this very this haunting, you know, feminine kind of voice and very grim. And it works. And the voice that he provides for Gen is great. And for some of the characters in the minor subplots, his voice for Safi and Frezik. I think I'm remembering the names right.
Grizzik.
Okay. I think there's a Frezik and a Grizzik, and I always mix up the two. But his voices for the two of them are 10 out of 10 top.
You know, that's what I've heard. And honestly, as I was like halfway through the book, I thought, okay, well, I got to make sure I finish it, you know, before today so that we can talk about it. Mm-hmm. I'm like, okay, well, maybe I'm going to break down and get the audiobook. And then I looked at the price, and then I looked at my wallet. I'm like, ah, crap, I can't do that today. So I'm okay, so after going through the whole book and seeing how Anduin heavy it is, and that's not a negative, mind
no,
you.
No, it's not.
It's one of those things where I was just like, I kind of would have liked to hear him narrate the whole thing. And I think I'm actually going to go back and get the audiobook and just kind of maybe spot listen or something like that. But the idea of actually
at a time is my advice.
Okay. But I mean, like, the idea of actually hearing the story from Anduin through his eyes, in a sense, is like really intriguing to me. Like, I'm so surprised and happy that they were able to get him to do the reading for it, because when your main character of a story is the one that you've identified with for the past, you know, few years and stuff, and he's just telling you the story, it is something that, I don't know, one of those things that it doesn't happen very often.
It doesn't, and it really kind of captured a certain kind of magic. And for someone who has primarily been playing on the Horde side for the past several years, I, again, started as Alliance, switched over the Horde, but I care just as much about a number of characters that are quote-unquote Alliance as I do characters with Horde. I care about the characters in the entire world, regardless of my faction pride leaning toward red and away from blue. So I definitely say it was a great job by Josh, and I think Anduin is definitely a highlight as far as the audiobook goes. And of course, he's one of the major characters of the book. Arguably, Sylvanas and Anduin take the front stage for most of the book, but there are some important secondary characters as well. I guess that kind of naturally lends into the question is, for you, Ben,
yes,
what character were you, when all was said and done, who was your favorite character? Which character did you feel got the best treatment, the best development? These may all be different, separate questions. I understand that.
That's one of the hard things. So, I mean, I can't say all of them because that's just a cop-out answer. But so I got to tell you that I absolutely fell in love with Safi and Krezik, like so much so.
Why are you and I so alike on Krezik?
I'll say this. The big reason is because it's a cute little side story that, I mean, it could have been a short story all its own. It really didn't have anything to do with the plot of this book. But the thing is I think it's the most important part of the book if you're playing World of Warcraft.
Yes.
One of the big things that I had going into Battle for Azeroth was, I'm like, why does everybody give a crap about Azerite? It's just stuff. You know, it's like, oh, we're using it for everything. You know, Blizzard is great with their cutscenes, and I love them. And after reading the book and then going back and seeing those, like, Anduin and Sylvanas discover Azerite cutscenes, I noticed that Taryn Gregory and his team put so much nuance into their reactions that, like, just watching it kind of casually, it's like, okay, it's a surprising thing. Whoop-de-doo. But then actually reading that bit in the book and having, you know, Christy
There's
Golden.
There's a reason for their expression changing as suddenly as it did.
Exactly. Like, having her go through and, like, write exactly what they're feeling and everything just made it like, oh, okay, I totally get why we're going to be fighting over this now. And it made me feel a lot better going into Battle for Azeroth, because otherwise it's like, oh, we're just getting ore. Who cares? But what really nailed it and sealed the deal is all the stuff that Safi and Krezik did in their work with Azerite and everything. And I loved it. I loved seeing their relationship grow. I loved seeing, you know, it's like they have this huge history and backstory where they hate each other. But as soon as Azerite comes into play, it's like, okay, we're cool. And then, like, everything kind of rekindling and growing. And I love the idea of feathers so much. And, like, there's so much about them that just adds so much heart and joy into this book that already has a whole lot of heart.
Yeah, and a couple interesting things I thought about with the whole Safi and Krezik relationship of course, there may be some of you listening to this who don't care about reading the book, so you're just getting spoiled right now, so I might as well give a little more detail. Safranetta is a gnome and Krezik is a goblin. And there's a couple interesting things about the relationship. Before the book takes place, they had a relationship. They fell in love. They got married. It was a fast and furious wedding that ended poorly. But this is a gnome-goblin relationship that the likes of which has never been touched on in World of Warcraft before. I mean, you've had relationships brought up with, like, you know, characters of different races, but never a gnome and a goblin, which I thought intriguing. Mm-hmm. And for a relationship involving two races that are quite often seen as comic relief, and I would say that to a degree, there's somewhat comic relief in this book. They provide somewhat a lighter tone to what's a very heavy story in the forefront. And I appreciate that this subplot is in place because it creates that kind of balance I feel was really necessary to get through just some of the heavier parts of the book. But one thing I thought about is, like, how come their relationship just works again? How does it become closer again? And why are they able to fix everything? And I have a theory behind it. Because they were both working with Azurite throughout the story, they were, of course, coming into physical contact with it, and they were getting all these ideas and stuff like that. Azeroth doesn't care about race, Ben. Azeroth, I think, just cares about itself and life itself on Azeroth. Mm-hmm. So I just feel like when their contact with Azurite was opening up their minds to different thoughts, possibilities, ideas, and all that stuff, it was also allowing them to look past Horde versus Alliance, Gnome versus Goblin, and just looking at each other as souls, as people.
Yep. And on top of that, too, I mean, the way that Azurite works is that it enhances, it totally fires, like, every single bit of you up more so that you're more aware, you're able to think faster, and you feel great and stuff. So if they're working with the stuff and if they're around the stuff and everything, of course they're going to be the better version of themselves, which is one of the reasons why the relationship's going to work better.
Yeah, absolutely. And I've got to say, not just because of the voice acting involved, just really brought these characters alive to me and made it shine, and the story was great and everything like that, but I was so into this subplot, and I was so happy about these characters that I was so upset by the end of the book.
And oh my gosh, I know.
There was one moment in listening to this book, and for other people reading it, there's one moment in this book that I think that you will almost definitely shed a tear or at least get somewhat misty-eyed.
And
is when you reach the conclusion of this story and their fate, which is just, it was Kindy all over again, Ben.
I know. What is it with Chrissy Golden and killing gnomes?
Right? This is why gnomes don't appear in World of Warcraft cinematics, because Chrissy Golden kills them off before they can get there.
So here's the thing. There's just that tiniest sliver of hope, and I'm hoping that it works out. I mean, if it doesn't, it doesn't. But was it Safi or Grezik who said, because they had a little bit of Azurite on them, they said, yep, maybe it's enough for us to survive.
Yep. It was the wedding ring, I think.
Yeah, I don't know. Maybe, I mean, it would be great, but it'd be also so incredibly heartbreaking if only one of them does.
Yeah, and it'd be really interesting to see if there's anything brought up about those characters when we get to the game itself, and that's going to be another point to talk about. It's just like connections to the game. I'm sure we'll get to that in a bit. But yeah, the Grizzik Saffronella story, while it wasn't the most important story for driving the narrative of the overall story of Warcraft, Battle for Azeroth, and all that, it was still the story that I enjoyed the most from the novel.
And see, I think it was the most important story for the game, just because it did give that understanding of Azurite and why it's so important. And, I mean, the fact that something like that could bring people together as opposed to tearing them apart is important. I mean, that whole concept could be used moving forward in the narrative of the overarching story. But even more so, just to see, like, the lengths that Gallywix is going through to make sure to get this stuff, that, I mean, Anduin saw how important it was for healing and, building and everything like that. where Sylvanas is looking at it as we've got to get it to defend ourselves. Right. I mean, it to me, that's the key that makes me happy to go into Battle for Azeroth and see what's going to happen.
Yeah, Azerite definitely doesn't seem like, just as you called it earlier, MacGuffin anymore. It feels like it has a bit more purpose. Another thing, just a small callback that I have to point out, is they tied it so well to existing lore in World of Warcraft. You essentially find out that Azerite and Khajiit, if they aren't one and the same thing, they are basically pretty darn close. The stuff that inspired goblins to create Khajiit-Khola is essentially this.
Mm-hmm, exactly. And they dug down so far that he hit the Azerite. But, I mean, the way that I figure it is that kind of the Azerite liquid bled into the Khajiit veins, mm-hmm, that were in there, or something along those lines. Like, it's not a pure source or something like that.
Right, right. And this, the Azerite definitely seems like it's a more powerful version of what the goblins had before.
Mm-hmm. It's like, if Azeroth is an egg, this is like the yolk. Yeah. And the Khajiit is the white part, or something like that.
That's a great analogy that I never considered, but it really works for me. Okay, so we're both fans of Grizzik and Saffy. I think that much is clear.
And feathers. Don't forget feathers.
Yes, and feathers. of the other characters, though, since you took those first, and they were basically my answer too, so I'm going to throw one more into the mix there. As much as it's an important story for Sylvanas and Anduin, I feel like this was also a really important story for Kalia Menethil, who is, yeah, the sister of Arthas. And it's funny how little we knew, like really knew, about who was the sister of Arthas. What was she like? What was her past like? How did she escape? What are her motives, her feelings about the Forsaken having Lordaeron and all this and stuff like that? And in a single book, and a relatively small portion of the book, Christy Golan does so much to just really define who Kalia is.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. It's like all of a sudden, oh, hey, by the way, super important character now.
Yeah. Arguably more important than, I would say, Malfurion and Tyrande.
Oh, yeah, definitely. I mean, the her entire, you know, role in growth in the book is what, I mean, ruins the day, but at the same time opens up so many narrative directions for the story to go. I mean, if you look at what she is and who she is now, mm-hmm, there's 20 different ways that this could play out, and all of them are going to be interesting and exciting.
Okay, so the question I'm going to toss at you, and we'll try to fill in the blanks as to why this is a possibility, but do you foresee Kalia replacing Sylvanas?
I see her trying.
Mm-hmm.
So here's the thing. A lot of people, because of Azeroth Roundtable and everything, they know John's love for Sylvanas.
Yeah.
No one has any idea how much I freaking love this character. I think that...
Oh, well,
I mean,
that's interesting.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you know, by the time he's... Because you know him, he talks first. Mm-hmm. So by the time he says all his stuff, I'm just basically like, yeah, I agree with you. I mean, that's all I can do. Like I freaking love this character. I've always loved her. I thought that she was fantastic. From the first time that I got that necklace and I left Evergreen Forest or whatever it is, you know, around Silvermoon when I was leveling up and I went and turned it in, I was instantly like loving the story, wanting to know more about her and everything like that. And I've always supported her. I've always said that she's just completely misunderstood, that she's not evil. She just looks at things differently because she's undead, because she's lost everything and has tried to, you know, like, she regained her freedom. She built herself back up, and she sees the undead as her people. And the idea of, you know, the actual, you know, leader of Lordaeron coming back, it's going to be absolutely terrifying for her. It's going to be something that is, I mean, especially in an undead form. I mean, obviously she's going to try to stop it.
Idea about that right now.
Oh, I know. And I'm so excited for this because more Sylvanas is always good. I'm always for that. It's one of the reasons why I loved Stormheim, but was ultimately completely dissatisfied. Why seeing her in hell was so great. I'm like, oh, what's going on? And then, you know, she gets the F out of Dodge. And I mean, it's one of those things where I want more of Sylvanas. I always want more of Sylvanas. And having her as, you know, a main lead in this book gives people kind of more of an understanding for her. And I know that with how well she was written, how well she was captured, there's still going to be people who don't understand her motives, understand her, and just think that she's pure evil. And that's the most upsetting thing to me about, like, her portrayal in this book. Although the portrayal is accurate, but so many different things can be kind of taken from how she was written, which I love. And I think that that exemplifies and is, like, exactly how she is as a character.
Yeah, I would say that for some people who are just assuming that Sylvanas is going to be a Lich Queen or Lich King 2.0, they will see some of the choices that Sylvanas made in this book as supporting that path. Like, mm-hmm. There are some people who would say that some of the choices that Sylvanas makes is clear evidence that she's going to be the final boss of the expansion or something like that. She's going to be the next big bad. It's going to be Garrosh Hellscream all over again. And I wouldn't necessarily agree with that. I see her more as a very severe anti-hero. And if you were to take a look at it from the perspective of just a king or a queen, a ruler of people, if you were to find out that there is a threat within your kingdom where this section of people could possibly overthrow you, would you or would you not attempt to try to cull that?
Yeah. I mean, that's kind of what you do. It's you're the ruling power in a kingdom, you know. Why would you let anyone overthrow you? And like one of the huge contrasts in the book is how Anduin leads versus Sylvanas. And I think near the end, it was, I forget which character said it, but, or maybe it was just even narration, but just the specific differences of Anduin's people love him and will follow him. Whereas Sylvanas's people are scared of her, but like fully support her at the same time. And it's the whole idea of circumstance. You know, if you look at the people of Stormwind, they've just had their king die. There's this new prince who's now, you know, been promoted to king, and they love him. They know what he stands for. He's a priest of the light and everything. So it's easy to follow someone who is, you know, essentially God chosen as, hey, this is a good person. You're cool. You know, it's easy to do that. Whereas, again, if you look at Sylvanas, she lost everything. She's been with the living. She knows how people see her. She knows how people see undead. And like, there's a surprisingly strong, like, motherly aspect to her on top of, hey, I'm ruling these people. She wants to protect these people, but at the same time thinks she's the only one who can. She has to be the one who leads them. She has to be the one who controls them so that they don't experience more pain from what they've already had. And that's one of the reasons why, you know, yeah, she goes along with the whole, you know, gathering ceremony and or gathering day or whatever you want to call it, because she knows that a good majority of them are going to be disappointed. And guess what? She wasn't wrong. Yeah. And just like cultivating the goodwill of, I'm doing this because you want it, but it's not going to end good. I mean, she lucked out that the others wanted to defect. I mean, as horrible as it is, and she did the steps that she thought was appropriate to hold on to her rule, as well as get the support of the people who were rejected to, you know, really spread that around and emphasize what she's been trying to tell them this whole time.
I appreciate that you were bringing that stuff up, because one argument that I was going to make, and I still think that I'm correct on this to a point, but I'm understanding her point of view a bit better the way you're putting it, is I would say that Sylvanas and Anduin rule differently, where Anduin rules with his heart. Sylvanas rules with her head far more. She's far more tactical. She thinks things through. She's very strategic in her thinking, where Anduin is willing to put a lot of faith in the humanity of his people.
Yeah, no, I'm totally with you on that. And a big portion because of that is because Sylvanas doesn't have a heart anymore. Like, I'm not talking literally it's not pumping or anything, but because of everything that's happened to her, she doesn't have any warmth feelings. She doesn't have hope. She has, this is how I survive. This is tactfully what I'm going to do. And I mean, even the book said she always thinks like three moves ahead. You know, she's looking to see what will better her people and her position to keep taking care of them. And Anduin doesn't really, I mean, he has the luxury of being able to be all like, okay, cool. Well, we're going to try this thing, even though it's against what my advisors say and stuff, but we're going to do it anyway.
All of his advisors too, like yep. Every single one. And that takes some brass. I have to say that as much as he was going against his advisors on this, you have to feel that to a degree, he might have earned his advisors' respect a bit for just being that determined and not for showing a backbone and saying, no, this is the way we're going to do it.
Yep, exactly. I think that organizing and determining that they were going to have that meetup is what truly turned him into the king of Stormwind. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, he'll still listen to what everybody says. He'll still respect their opinion, but go the way he feels is right. And I mean, that's one of the big things that I respect about him as a character is that he's a good character. He's a good king. And I mean, I hope he's around for a long time because I want to see what happens to him. And even more so, like, he is the hope in this world now that, you know, Jaina is, it has fallen from that position.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. And another thing, I know we're kind of hopping all over characters and all over the place here, but since we're talking about Anduin right now, I am really glad that there was enough time given to the Anduin-Gen dynamic that I was shown that Anduin is not in a position where Gen is basically heavily influencing him, and Anduin's going with what Gen says. The biggest concern I had, especially some of it coming from just seeing that cutscene beforehand that Taryn put together, is I had this feeling that, oh my gosh, Gen Greymane is going to basically kind of be, he's not going to be a black dragon in disguise, but he's going to kind of fill that Katrina Prestor, that role that Onyxia had, basically. Yeah. And Gen's going to influence his views and his thoughts, and that's going to have an impact on Anduin, and maybe Gen's being controlled by old gods and manipulated that way and such like that. I'm glad to see, after reading this book, that I feel the odds for Gen having that impact on Anduin are very low. Anduin is definitely his own person. Gen respects him as a king. They do disagree often, but they've also at the same time have a very strong, almost familial-like bond, because they are both rulers. They know what it's like to be in a father-son relationship with a ruler, and while they may not, Anduin even brings up at one point in the story that Gen will never replace Varian, but he appreciates Gen because he understands what it's like.
Yeah, and so going back to kind of Gen being corrupted and everything, I think Gen is Gen.
Yes.
And going forward, I think he is, but this book completely supported my belief into what I think is going to be happening with him. And that is that the hatred is going to overcome him. And I think he starts the fire in Teldrassil. I think he's the one who does it.
Yeah.
But
I could see that too.
Yeah. I mean, and the big thing is like, again, we were kind of talking about how, yeah, we both play Horde. We both, you know, have a slight bias in that, but we enjoy characters from, you know, the world. And I really like Gen in the fact that, to me, he's a true villain. And I know that there are plenty of Worgen players or anything who think he's great and everything like that. That's awesome. But for someone to have so much hate just filled in them, like whether it's focusing on a person or the entire faction of undead and then spreading that to the Horde and everything, to me, he's the perfect villain. And he's a villain, I appreciate but he's not that. Evil. Yeah, exactly.
He is an antagonist. I mean, he truly mm-hmm. fits a definition of an antagonist for the story. And you're right. Just kind of the moments in the story where, like when Gen's brought to the Cathedral of Light and sees Alonzo's Fowl. Who of course, the undead archbishop, who's brought over there. Gen sees him and he just rages. He just lashes out. And, he was one step away from just tearing Alonzo's apart and instead chose wisely to just take off. But yeah. Those moments of anger, those moments of rage, I think that could very easily be foreshadowing.
Yep. And that's one of the things that was just so good is seeing just the dynamic play between him and the fact that by the end of the book, yeah, he's like, okay, some of them are okay, mm-hmm. but there's no way that he's going to, you know, really try to go and be friends or anything like that. It's going to be all, you know, the idea of, oh, well, you know, the people who have a little bit more of their brains are cool, but the rest of them need to just be extinguished. You know, that hate is still there. It's still seething and growing inside him. And having that like on display and getting a better understanding of that again is one of the wonderful things that Christy Golden does by just, you know, focusing in on kind of the bare minimum of needed information and just letting that sprout and grow into these characters when she's writing. And I gotta say that the Anduin Gen dynamic is so well played in this book. And he never does the I told you so at the end or anything like that. He's no. respectful of his king. And even though, like you said, they have differing views on everything, he's still supporting him because that's just what he would do.
Yeah. There were a lot of great moments in this story. And there were a lot of great scenes, a lot of great dialogues. And I'd kind of like to take a moment to just talk about what each of our favorite moments from the book was. And for myself, I would just have to say, and again, this is kind of touching on why I feel like it was such an important book for Kalia, to see Kalia go from being this relatively quiet and reserved woman who's had a very haunted past to what was basically lucky to be alive and is now lucky to be alive twice. to see her be charged with that inspiration to realize that these Forsaken from Lordaeron, they're still her people. They're still people of Lordaeron, and she needs to do something about it. She needs to take some sort of action to free the people that perhaps want to be free, to rally her people together, that she need to step out of the shadows and stuff. And just seeing her take that moment to essentially cause what would almost start war between Alliance or Horde, but I think it was very important for that moment to happen. It showed a lot of growth and development in Kalia, and it showed her strength and her resolve and just trying to, I'm just envisioning in my mind that scene of her keeping the shield and barrier up until finally Sylvanas is triumphant and just overcomes and she lets her guard down, and in that one moment she falls. But that was such a charged moment for me, and I'm really excited to see where things go with Kalia, and I think that was a great moment for her.
Yeah, I completely agree. Can I just point out that, again, Inaru is screwing things up?
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, I think one thing that we've seen is that Naru are not necessarily the most good isn't not, always good. Good isn't always right.
Yeah, they're not the most benevolent of race.
Yes. Yeah, and Kalia now being this kind of semi-forsaken, dead but not dead kind of thing, a holy
like a
undead?
New kind, new kind of forsaken.
Yeah, and I think that's interesting, and it's something that gives her an even closer tie with her people in the way, and. Mm-hmm. It's an event that creates a lot of questions, and I feel like that kind of change for her character and that kind of positioning, puts her in a really good place to be, the future ruler for the Forsaken faction. Like, if it hadn't been for this development for Kalia, one of the things for the longest time that I was wondering is that considering everything that was happening with Sylvanas and some people wondering like, well, is Sylvanas going to become a final boss? Is Sylvanas going to, one day no longer be the leader of the Forsaken? One thing I always ask myself is, well, really, quite honestly, who could replace her? And I could kind of see Nathanos now being an option, but outside of Nathanos, I didn't really have a good answer for that. I mean, for a while, I was thinking, well, maybe that's why Lillian Voss was created to be a potential replacement. But seeing how her characters changed with the Rogue stuff in World of Warcraft and all that, that's mm-hmm. definitely not her place. But with Kalia now, she's in a very unique position to be able to, I feel, lead the Forsaken should Sylvanas be taken out of the picture for one reason or another. Now, don't get me wrong. I do not think Sylvanas is going to be defeated, vanquished, or anything Yay. Like that anytime soon. She's going to be around for a while.
Yeah. So here's the thing that I see happening. She's going to be going into it without the real understanding of being an undead. Mm. And I think that either she's going to like end up kind of living with her people, kind of learning about them or things like that, or she's going to be an advocate for, you know, let's get the undead, their people and all that stuff. You know, I'm proof of this. And if Sylvanas is the leader of the Horde and Kalia ends up being the leader of the undead, then like I can kind of see that happening too. But it's one of those things where would Sylvanas let someone really be the leader there? Like in this book, she's conflicted because she has to be the leader of the Horde. You know, she's the war chief, but you know, the people expect more of her because she's always been there. And just having Kalia kind of come in and maybe take that position. I can see that happening if time goes by, if, you know, she gains a following and hell, if she gets, you know, gains trust of Sylvanas, which that is probably not going to happen. But like, this is one of those things, like I said, there's so many different branches and possibilities where her story can go. And it's so exciting to see this brand new type of character who, you know, we knew very little about her from, you know, Warcraft 3 forward. You know, everybody just presumed she was dead. Then she showed up in the Order Hall and it's one of those things where it's like, she really means something. And I love the whole calling to her of Amenethil has to fix this, which it's a noble goal.
Yeah.
And if she does end up being some sort of leader for her people, like I know she's always going to have the best intentions of it, assuming she's been brought back fully as herself.
That's another good point. And I also, as much as I want to see Kalia be a strong part of the Battle for Azeroth storyline, there is a part of me that kind of feels like we've been down this road before, in that while, yes, Kalia got a lot of attention and development and stuff like that, still, this is mostly about Sylvanas and Anduin, and what we're doing with Kalia, I think what Christy Golden and the creative team are doing with Kalia are sowing the seeds for future content, for future storytelling. Mm-hmm. As much as I want Kalia to be a main part of Battle for Azeroth, I think more so she's going to come into play in the expansion or second expansion after that, whether it's revisiting Northrend, what happens when Kalia meets Tyrion?
Yeah.
Who's arguably also Arthas to a degree. Arthas's actual fate, the fate of his soul, isn't entirely clear anymore. You've got to wonder, Is the spirit of Arthas actually completely gone, destroyed, vanquished? I'm not entirely sure anymore, especially after the Death Knight class hall line.
I know, and with Bolvar wearing that Lich King helm and everything, he's already not himself anymore.
Yes.
So I'm really interested to see what's going to happen with that. And, like, is there potentially,
and I
know, like,
I said a moment ago I meant Bolvar.
Yeah. Sorry, that's one of the reasons why I threw Bolvar in there. Yes, just to make sure you didn't get any letters.
Sometimes Tyrion and Bolvar felt like the same person to me. I'm sorry.
Oh, no, they did. And they totally did, considering Tyrion's there the whole time, too. But, yes. But like, the idea of her, you know, doing a pilgrimage to follow what Arthas did versus, like, is she going to try and infiltrate the undead? And I know maybe she starts getting, like, kind of a cult following and, you know, kind of builds up leadership from there. You know, it's like, what could potentially happen? Which I haven't been on the beta too super much from what I've been doing. It's been mostly new content. Mm-hmm. But where are the undead? Like, are they hanging out in Orgrimmar?
I would have to imagine so. I feel like I know a good answer for where the undead, like, canonically could be.
If it's spoiler related, don't worry too much about it. Tell me off air.
No,
but
no, it's not spoiler related. This is just a logical conclusion that I thought of.
Okay.
Beneath Orgrimmar, there's a lot of area that's been, you know, built and constructed. Where Ragefire
That's
Chasm
true.
Is under
that is
the
very
city,
true.
Under the city of Orgrimmar, as it were. I could totally see them claiming that under city of Orgrimmar as kind of a temporary home.
Well, I mean, it's like, you know, they might have the war chief on their side on creating a new home.
Yeah.
Okay, that'd be really cool. I would like to see that.
And I think that for the Night Elves, I think most of them basically retreat to, after the Bring of Tildor, so I would imagine that a lot of them will retreat to Stormwind. Maybe some join up with the Draenei over on the Isles over there. I'm not entirely sure. Before we get into, like, kind of the last major question I want to ask you, I brought up my favorite part of the book. I want to give you an opportunity to bring up your favorite part of the book.
I was really hoping that you would forget that part.
Oh.
I mean, there's so much in it that I really enjoyed.
Well,
and
pick one that comes to mind.
Well, okay. My favorite part is probably the thing that kicks off the entire story. Mm-hmm. And that is Will and Anduin's relationship, like getting to see
totally
that whole
about
idea.
Talking about Will this whole
time. Yeah. I mean, like just seeing him as, you know, serving the Rin family and just being absolutely devoted. Like it totally made me think Alfred. Yeah. And it's one of those things where you can tell that just the love that he has for the family, for Anduin. I mean, he's essentially another parent, you know, if you think about it. And seeing Anduin with him at the end is, I mean, God, I cried big time.
Oh my gosh. And this is, you know, I totally forgot about this part because it was so relatively early in the story, but I remember how I said I got teary eyed when Safi died.
Oh yeah, me too.
If you end up getting the audiobook, oh my gosh, that's going to be heavy for you when you get
Oh,
that
I
part.
Can't even imagine
it's,
that.
It's so gut-wrenching, it's good.
Yeah, but I mean, seeing their relationship and having it grow, and then, like, when Anduin's sitting with him and Will doesn't want any heals, mm-hmm. and he's just accepting that it's time and everything, it's heartbreaking, but, you know, it's the good kind. And then, finally, at the end, when Will is saying how he sees different people and everything, but then his wife isn't there, and it's because she's undead.
Right.
It's such a twist that, I mean, I sobbed for that too, but it is one of those things where it's just kind of like, wow, it really gave so much understanding to one of the reasons why Anduin was pushing so hard for this. And then,
and he's
of
even
course,
called out for it by Gen. He's like, "You're doing this because of Will." And Anduin's like, "Well, yes, I would. That is true, but also this and this."
Mm-hmm. Exactly. And like seeing him getting comfort from the Archbishop and everything, and all of that. It's just it's woven together so well that you can see the grief and the hope and, you know, just the kind heart that Anduin has. And that's my favorite part. It's a sad, sad part, but it's my favorite part because of all those reasons, just all tied in together. And it's ultimately pushing a good man to do a good thing. And I love it.
That's a good one. It's funny because that, again, that was so relatively early on in the book that just naturally for me that the latter parts of the book are a bit more memorable because they're like the last parts that I remember hearing, the last parts that I remember. But that was a really strong moment in the story. Mm-hmm. And
definitely.
And it was so necessary for just propelling the plot forward and forward and keeping it moving. So, yeah, definite good choice there. Now, the last thing I want to talk about before we wrap up, I can't believe it's almost been an hour, but
there's so much to talk about.
We really could honestly spend 2 or 3 hours talking about this. We haven't even talked about Velsyndra.
Yeah.
We haven't talked about, you know, the whole faction of Forsaken there. And perhaps it's to a degree for those who may be just listening and haven't read the book or listened to the audiobook, it may be good that we aren't talking about everything because you might find your own moments there if you feel encouraged to actually check out the book for yourself. If for some reason you're listening to this and haven't checked out the book, I encourage you to still do so because you're going to find a lot of good stuff.
It's great. It's well worth every second that you spend with it.
Absolutely. Big question I have for you, and this is something that's kind of been bothering me for a while. As good as the story was, I have to ask, in your opinion, I'll give mine in a second.
Okay.
Do you feel that reading this book or knowing this story is mandatory for appreciating what comes next in Battle for Azeroth?
This might seem like I'm all over the place with this answer.
It's fine, because I kind of am, too.
Okay. I think that those going into Battle for Azeroth who are excited for the expansion, it's new WoW content, you know, they don't really dig too far into the story or anything like that. Just like, oh, we're going to kill Horde, or oh, we're going to kill Alliance, and stuff like that. That's perfectly fine. And adding more to that, I don't think is actually going to help anybody who plays the game that way. And again, everybody has their own way of playing. It's perfectly fine. Mm-hmm. For those who are, you know, kind of story heavy and everything like that, I think this is a must read. It really gives you an idea of, you know, the opposite faction. You know, if I was only an Alliance player, I mean, this might grow my hatred for Sylvanas. Who knows? If anything, I think it gives more understanding of her. If you're a Horde player, I think that it really helps accentuate Anduin as a king. It gives you that peek into the fact that he is his own person and he's ruling, kind of like we talked about already. If you're going into Battle for Azeroth hesitant about everything, not wanting to be part of the Horde versus Alliance, you know, how I was early on when it was announced and things like that. I mean, heck, I leveled up and retired a mage just specifically because she wouldn't do this. This book has me understanding the driving force behind a lot of it even more. And I'm still a little, you know, hesitant, but optimistic about what's going on with Teldrassil. But aside from that, I think that this is a great step and a great intro into what's going to be happening with Battle for Azeroth, and gives you a huge peek at what's going on in those major characters' minds, which is something that I think is greatly needed for an expansion that is completely about just death and destroying the other side and everything like that.
Yeah, I mostly feel the same way as you. I feel like there are a number of sections about this story that I feel really could be well by being referenced or noted or explained in the game to some degree for the thousands upon possibly millions of people that will end up not having read the story when they play Battle for Azeroth, because I feel there's a lot of important development for a number of characters in here. And for... it gives people a better understanding of why Sylvanas does what she does. It gives them a better understanding of the Gen and Anduin dynamic. It will also eventually help explain, it would also eventually help explain to people, why is Kalia Menethil such a big thing now whenever she does actually, yeah, you know, take the front stage. There's so many important things that happen here. And I would like to hope that a lot of this stuff is referenced in the game or brought up in the game. At the same time, I have a feeling that's not going to be, because that would, if stuff like, if you bring up just some of the stuff, then that kind of causes its own problems and people wishing that more of it was mentioned in the game. And that there's always, there's been this talk for the longest time since I've been playing World of Warcraft, like, how important is it to know the stories outside of the game itself in order to appreciate the game? And this is one of those places where I feel really, really torn about it. It's like, this story does so much to give you a better appreciation for what's happening in the game. At mm-hmm. the same time, you can play Battle for Azeroth without having read this story, and you'll be okay. I just wouldn't recommend it.
Yeah, you're not going to get the deeper meaning behind a lot of stuff. Yeah. And that's, again, some people don't care. They don't want that in all the world to them.
Some people just want the
loot. Exactly. Personally, story is king for me. You know, character development and story and fun. Those are what I look for when I'm playing World of Warcraft. And this has added a lot of that to the canon for me.
Yeah, I will, a couple of other points I'll make about just like connecting the game to the story. I really appreciate that the ending cutscenes for Horde and Alliance tied into the beginning of this story, where you get to see both those scenes. Even if they weren't played out word for word, second for second, exactly as they were, it was pretty darn close. And that was very deliberate. And I love how they were able to marry the two different formats of storytelling by bringing them together into that point. Mm-hmm. And I hope that they make use of that in the future, where they take moments from the game and give them their moment in written form too, to kind of either expand on them or flesh them out some.
My favorite thing about marrying the cinematic to the book.
Yeah.
Is when Gallywick says, "Oh, I didn't know there was a room behind the throne."
Yes, I noticed that too.
Absolute best part of the entire beginning part of the book.
Ever so slightly breaking the fourth wall by breaking the other wall behind.
Yeah, exactly. I had to throw that out there because it was such a fun little thing. It so, was. Anyways,
no, that was a great moment. One thing that has me excited about, like, the potential for including parts of the story in the game, I feel that the meeting at the Arathia Highlands, kind of like the whole summit thing where the Forsaken are allowed to meet their families and stuff like that. Now, here's my pitch. Caverns of Time, Arathia Highlands. The Infinite Dragonflight are disguised as some of Sylvanas' Dark Rangers, intent on actually killing Alliance people to break Sylvanas' word and start full-out war earlier than possible between the Horde and Alliance to fulfill the Infinite Dragonflight's agenda. And you have to stop them.
And some of them are disguised as Alliance player, or as Alliance who are going to be killing the Horde.
Trying to break Anduin's vow to not to harm them too. Yep.
I like that. I like that a lot. I would love to see this.
Caverns of Time dungeon. I would love to see a Caverns of Time thing taking that whole part of the story. You could totally make a Caverns in Time encounter out of that.
Oh, that'd be so fantastic.
So,
now I want this, bro. Thanks a lot.
I just feel like it's such a pivotal part of the book. And I was just thinking, what ways are there to bring really momentous parts of this story into the game, and I feel like that's the best thing that they could do. I mean, it's kind of echoes of the whole destruction of Theramore thing, right?
But
I wouldn't necessarily do this Caverns of Time thing right at the beginning or even halfway in the Battle for Azeroth. Heck, it doesn't even need to happen necessarily in Battle for Azeroth. If we ever get to a point where the Infinite Dragonflight is a focus and a problem again, you can still revisit that moment and how the Infinite Dragonflight tried to disrupt it, and I think it'll be great.
What I want to see is, in Teneris, a closed trap door, a few feet away from that, a scorch mark, and then a few feet from that, kind of scooching, and then footsteps going away.
Yes.
That's what I want to see.
Yes. Maybe a discarded ring with a very, like, you, it's a clickable, and you click on it, and it, there's a very ever small piece of Azerite left on it, and it's mostly...
Oh, no. There, it is a small, crudely made ring with its jewel missing.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Oh, that'd be great.
I hope someone from Blizzard is listening to this and taking notes and passing it on. That'd be awesome.
Just little touches. That's all we got ask for. Just little things. Little things. Like, you know,
it's
whole dungeons.
All about the little things, too. And that's the thing. I don't need the whole story of Before the Storm put into the game, but putting in those few slight nods to it would be great.
Yeah, I think so. And that's one of the neat things that, you know, pop up every now and then. And if someone who hasn't read the story finds it, it's either just, oh, it's a thing. Okay. Or if they get curious, they Google it, find out there's a whole book in relation to it. And then, hey, there's just more people reading the book.
Yeah. Again, if you have not listened to this audiobook or read the book as an ebook or physical hardcover, you obviously have heard how much Ben and I have enjoyed it. And quite honestly, we probably covered half of the stuff. There's so much we didn't talk about, and I'm not going to have the show go 2 hours to talk about everything. So it gives you plenty of incentive to go check out the book for yourself if you haven't already. I highly recommend it.
Definitely. It's a big four thumbs up from us.
Yes, and big toes, too. Big toes up. Yeah, also.
Definitely.
Ben, where can people find you on the internet besides here?
Wow. Best place to find me is actually on Twitter. I am at Ben the Mage. If you want to know all the other stuff I'm involved with, I actually do a show with John Jagger. It's called Azeroth Roundtable. Do a show with Eludra the Mage called Battle Pets. And I'm on a new D&D podcast called Secrets of Talengar. Guard. Talengar. No, it's not a pirate one. Talengard.
It's not a pirate one yet.
That's true. We never know where we might go. But that is with Everick, Zafira, Eludra, Draven Dresden, and the wonderful Quoted Nevermore.
I have listened to the first couple of episodes of that, and I greatly enjoy it. And I think it's a lot of fun. People should definitely check it out.
Oh, thanks.
I'm doing my own D&D thing, too, because it seems to be the thing to do nowadays.
Exactly. And I'll have to say that plus five to hit is pretty darn good. I enjoy it. I think everybody needs to take a listen, and I love your character.
Oh, thank you. Playing a female Tempest cleric halfling is it's not the warlock I used to be.
Nope, definitely not. And she is quite different.
It's one of the reasons why I chose to play a character like that is I figured if I was going to do something like this, I need to play something that was just so dramatically different from what I've been playing in the past. So you guys check out Secrets of Talengar, check out Plus Five to Hit if you're into D&D stuff. I think it's some great listening. You'll have a lot of fun. You can follow me on Twitter at Rowow, R-H-O-W-O-W. And of course, check out the other podcasts that I put together. That is Realm Maintenance and Hearth Casual. Hearth Casual for your Hearthstone fans. Realm Maintenance for all you Blizzard podcast fans that want to know more about Blizzard podcasts. And if you'd like to support those shows and this one, you can do so with 5-star reviews, just talking about it. Of course, your downloads are great. You can also support the show by going to patreon.com/realmpodcast. Supporting there helps all three shows because it's all running off the same server, same cost, same everything. So every bit helps, appreciated. Ben, the clock ticks ever closer to Battle for Azeroth. We're just 6 weeks away, and even less than that for the pre-patch shenanigans to start. I can't wait for it. I'm really looking forward to talking about our early adventures in Zandalar.
Oh my gosh, it is going to be eye-opening. We'll just put it that way.
I definitely agree. No pun intended. Until next time, folks, I've been Ro, he's been Ben, And we now return you to your regularly scheduled adventures in Azeroth. Goodbye, everybody.
Bye, people.
It's the end of the show, and that means it's once again time for your weekly podcast roundup brought to you by the Realm Maintenance Podcast. The following is an insanely quick rundown of every show I'm aware of that covered a Blizzard game and produced an episode between June 25th and July 1st of 2018. For General Blizzard Podcast, we have All Things Azeroth, Bard's Tavern, Battle.net News, Battle.net Sports, Blizzard Umbrella, Blizzard Watch, Blue Recluse, Epic Fail, The Freezing Nomad, Icy Veins, Nerf This, The Sundering, Tank and Spank, Torn Think Tank, and The Training Dummies. Your World of Warcraft shows include Azeroth Roundtable, Battle Pets, The Converted, Countdown to Classic, Control, Wild, Darkmoon Herald, Decoded, Dungeon Fables for Azeroth, Frazzlecast, Girls Gone Wild, The Half-Hill Report, Lion's Pride Tavern, Lorecraft Podcast, Lorewatch, Merely a Setback, The Raiders Confessional, The Starting Zone, Technically PvP, The Worgen Sal, World of Warcast, WoW Pre-Show, WoW Talk, and Saphira's Adventure. Inside the Tavern for Hearthstone, we have 16 Iron Dusty, Angry Chicken, Around the Hearth, Blizzlet Hearthstone, Brewmasters, Coin Conceit, The Daring Reporter, Happy Hearthstone, Hearth Casual, Hearth Coach, Hero Power Cast, Into the Wild, The Light Forge, Legend of the Innkeeper, Off Curve, Tier 5 Podcast, Top Deck Kings, Valetown, Bones Chosen, Walk to Work, and Well Met. Shattered Soulstone covered Diablo this past week. Heroes of Storm podcasts include Core, Gankbush Squad, Into the Nexus, Lords of the Storm, and Nexus Trolls. And finally, for Overwatch, we have the Bird Watchers, Black Rock Report, The Cavalry, Enter the Iris, Foul Play, Heroes Never Die, High Noon, Omnic Lab, One Trick Hero, Outlaws Outpost, The Overcast, Overwatch League Network, Owl Recap, Triggered, and Watchpoint Radio. You can catch a weekly podcast roundup at the end of this show and during the Realm Maintenance podcast. For links to all these shows and more great Blizzard podcasts, go to realm-maintenance.com. You can find this podcast on most major podcast apps. Follow us on Twitter at RestartCast. You can email the show at rollingrestartpodcast@gmail.com. The Rolling Restart is a presentation of Realm Maintenance Productions. You can find archives of the show at rollingrestart.frozenfoxmedia.com. The music for the show is Battle for Lordaeron by Neil Acree, and no copyright infringement is intended. Thanks for listening. We'll talk to you in 2 weeks.
This podcast is part of the Frozen Fox Media Network. Visit us at frozenfoxmedia.com for information about this and all the other content we offer. You can also find us on Twitter at Frozen Fox Media. Frozen Fox Media, cool content for the gaming community.